Paul Dixon has written many word books and dictionaries, including the Dixon Baseball Dictionary, the Congress Dictionary, a dictionary of the space age and slang. He was a contributing editor with Merriam-Webster in charge of the Lighter Side of Language series and did a byline commentary on language for NPR's All Things Considered. His new book is Words from the White House, Words and Phrases Coined or Popularized by America's Presidents. The book is published by Walker, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Paul Dixon back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being here.
Good to be back, Joe.
Give us a sense of how this particular book came about, of these words from the White House.
You know, I've been collecting words for years. It's like somebody else collects postage stamps, I collect words. But I've been long infatuated by the fact that the bully pulpit, actually a phrase that was coined by Teddy Roosevelt, President Roosevelt, were in fact presidential coinages. And part of it is the pulpit itself, but they're yet to be heard. But part of it is they're sort of under demand to come up with slogans and new ideas. And I really got fascinated when I found out that Warren G. Harding in 1920 creates a phrase which is still very much with us, which is founding fathers. Before 1920, when you referred to the original framers of the Constitution, you referred to them as the framers. And founding fathers was a conceit created by Harding. He also created the word bloviate, and he also created the word normalcy. But there was a conceit which was created by Harding, and it was used often in the negative. He would say, the founding fathers never meant for us to have, I don't know, you know, pastel colors on postage stamps or something. But he would often state it in the negative. The founding fathers never meant for us to help weaker nations. And then as I got looking further into it, I found out that even some of the early presidents, Jefferson for one, and others in that period, Madison, George Washington himself, were really wanted to create new words. They were working sort of in cahoots with Noah Webster, the dictionary maker, who felt that the American language should be different than the King's English. And so Jefferson, for one, created 114 words which are now listed in the Oxford English Dictionary as his creations, including the word belittle, which up until Fowler came out, well, I guess close to 1950, the British were still complaining about it being a phony word that was created by Jefferson to bedevil the English.
It does seem, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like many of these terms and phrases come out of the campaigns themselves.
Absolutely. You know, Tippecanoe and Tyler, too. The ones we grew up with in school, of course, New Deal, which was the Franklin D. Roosevelt. New Deal, actually, Roosevelt, several of his speechwriters claim credit for it, but Roosevelt himself said it was from Mark Twain's Connecticut Yankee and King Arthur's Court, where the hero promises these medieval peasants that they will have a New Deal if he takes over in that book by Mark Twain. So a lot of them do come out of the campaigns, and some come out of the inaugural speeches, not always the best terms, some that got presidents in trouble. When President Eisenhower gave his second inaugural, he said he would finalize plans in his second administration to do thus and so, and there was a huge outcry about his using the word finalize. Newspapers editorialized about it. English teachers, you know, wrung their hands, and it was sort of a cause célèbre that he had used this bit of military jargon, which was perfectly common. But it, you know, so but of course Eisenhower redeemed himself with his farewell speech with the military-industrial complex, which is a phrase which will probably ring for generations to come.
I was surprised to see how many times George W. Bush is quoted in the book. He had a reputation of somewhat murdering the English language. Half the time you are defending and taking a look at some of the words and showing like embedder, that this is a word that's actually been around for a while, and then looking at words that you believe he did create, like underestimate.
Yes. I mean, in a funny way, I mean, if you drop politics, I mean, you know, there's people that are, you know, question some of the Obama's creation, some of the words he's created and such. But in a funny way, Bush, in fact, was did they were malapropisms. There's no question. But in all fairness, what I did was I took these very terms that he used, and I went through the Oxford English Dictionary, which is now digitized, but the physical being is a 25-volume thing that would take a truck to carry around. And if you look back and you find some of these words actually do exist, did exist in English at one point, were used commonly, but that sort of fell away. So I gave him the benefit of doubt by saying, they aren't, people say, well, these are words that aren't in the dictionary. And I'd say, my point was, yeah, but they're not totally barbaric. And this underestimate, well, in a funny way, there's a certain, naive quality to that that's not too bad.
And words that we regularly use, especially in political terms, like Veep, goes to Alvin Barkley.
Right. And there are a lot of those that are used, I think, and some of them more interesting than others. I mean, one of the ones that threw me off the, really was interesting to me was iffy, which is, Franklin D. Roosevelt, we actually put him on the cover saying iffy, because he's well known for, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, and the New Deal, and many other phrases. But what one time in his second administration, he held a press briefing, and he said that he found some of the decisions of the Supreme Court to be iffy. And the papers led the next day, the lead was, President Roosevelt created a new word today, iffy, meaning sort of, they're a little bit on the edge, they're not entirely good, But it was just the fact that a president can almost fumble and come up with a word, and those words become part of the political vernacular. I think if I had to, crown somebody the king of them all, I think Teddy Roosevelt had the greatest sort of ear for that stuff that we still use. I mean, invisible government was Roosevelt's, Teddy Roosevelt's, muckraker, defrazzle, it was his. My favorite, I think, is lunatic fringe, which was Teddy Roosevelt. So some of them had real, feel for the language and realized that they could come up with a phrase that would have a live on or use it metaphorically. For example, Teddy Roosevelt's the first one to use loose cannon as a metaphor, meaning somebody who's not tied down securely, not somebody who's a little bit crazy.
These political phrases, loose cannon being one of them, digital divide, dollar diplomacy, entangling alliances. I assume that if this book was published 6 months from now, fiscal cliff would have been included.
Well, it wasn't a presidential word. That word was somebody on the Federal Reserve. But Obama is in there for President Obama is in there for Snowmageddon.
Snowmageddon,
the big snowstorm, and he's also in there for Sputnik moment. He at one point said that what this country needed to get it back in on its feet was a Sputnik moment, a challenge that would force us to go ahead, as did Sputnik, and revitalize education, revitalize various things in the society. It didn't go anywhere, but it was a phrase of his creation, and nobody had used it in that context before. So I guess fiscal cliff, would probably not make it because it was not a president himself.
Where did Obamacare come from?
That was by the opposition, and of course that was there was several conservative writers who were writing about it in magazines. It was journalists, and they came up with it as a pejorative. And of course, what eventually happened was the name itself for the act, I mean, is so many syllables that it's almost unrecallable. So Obamacare now is probably used even by those who are very much in favor of it. It'll probably exist far into the future, like Medicare does.
When you think of that, using one of the phrases, the bully pulpit, but because there is such a world stage of which these men stand on, I assume it makes it easier for these words and phrases to be introduced into our vocabulary.
Absolutely. And of course, it is where, I mean, for example, I'll give you a classic example where it is the bully pulpit. It's not until... There has always been a report from the beginning of the country, a January report to the Congress from the president. And in 1934, Franklin D. Roosevelt said, I'm going to rename this thing. I'm going to call it the State of the Union Address. That term had never existed before 1934. And all of a sudden, this annual report to the country now has a name. And, of course, if some journalist or somebody had mentioned it and given it that name, often, you know, in the hustings in the countryside, nobody would have paid attention. But when the president himself renames it the State of the Union, of course, it takes off immediately. And even when somebody like Harding, who was, you know, the founding fathers, I mean, that may have been used before, although there's no evidence that it was in common use before he came up with it. And so once he started using it, everybody picked it up as a way to describe the people who framed the Constitution. And what's interesting about it, it changes the meaning. If you call them the framers, it's different than calling them founding fathers. The founding fathers make them sound like they had a collective will, which, in fact, if you read about the Constitutional Convention, you realize there are a lot of different opinions, and not all of them were prevailed.
Well, it's a fascinating book and an awful lot of fun. Words from the White House is the new book, Words and Phrases Coined or Popularized by America's Presidents. It is published by Walker. Paul Dixon, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Again, Words from the White House, published by Walker. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.